Call the Ag Pool meeting to order because Rick just arrived, so now we can start. Glad to see you, Rick. You might want to know, Carol, that he was late. Thank you for all coming today. Peter, before we get started in the meeting, my goodness, you've really improved the looks of this place, and I'm not talking about the paint. We have two new people on board, and they're going to be out in the dairy area. Could you introduce them? I need to buy a couple minutes of time.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the pool, it's my pleasure to introduce our two new employees. Actually, I would like to ask Justin Nakano, who is their direct supervisor, to do an introduction.
Oh, you didn't tell me how big time you were. You know, this is great.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the pool. Is this home? We have two new field operations specialists. First, I'd like to introduce Alonzo, who's on the left. Past career, he was an interior communications electrician for the Navy for 4 years.
All right.
Thank you for your service.
Wow.
He then continued his career with a company called Corix, where he gathered and processed water and gas meter data for the city of Long Beach, and he was also held a supervisor position with them for 7 years. Alonzo enjoys spending time with family and friends. He owns a boat, and he enjoys camping and is a big sports fan. So,
I want to welcome you both.
Oh, wait, he's only talked about one.
Go ahead. No, I know. I wanted to talk about the one with the stiff shirt, you know, like he's still in the Navy. Go ahead.
Sorry. Throw my game off. I also like to introduce David Wynn. He's a graduate of UC Irvine in 2016 with a Bachelor's of Science in Earth System Science. He previously was a lab intern with the Orange County Public Health and Water Quality Laboratory. And most previously, he was a field technician for BlainTech, performing groundwater sampling along the Colorado River. David also enjoys camping, fishing, and playing his guitar.
Welcome to both of you. And when I introduce myself, you might think that I know something about the dairy industry. We have Ron Petersma here, one of the largest dairymen in the valley. We have Nathan, my assistant, who's smarter than I am. But these are your three dairy guys.
John.
Oh, and John and Henry.
Well, you forget soon, Bob.
How soon we forget. Welcome. And
were you going to talk about the other part of the group? You've got the state of California.
Oh, no, apparently only dairy matters. So.
And you've also got crops. So
who's that?
Yeah, we have three different levels of agriculture. Of course, state of California is the most important, and I'm not kidding. Carol is a deputy attorney general. Pete's the boss. You know, Larry in front of you is the greatest guy in the world. So, hey, listen, we welcome you, and if you have problems or concerns of the dairy area, agriculture, meters, water samples, or whatever, give us a call if you need help. We're glad to have you on. We want you to be successful.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bob, would you introduce me?
Pearson, have you asked for the floor?
Give him a shot.
Okay, we're gonna call the meeting to order. The consent calendar is in front of you. I'm sure you've had an opportunity to look it over. Do we have any questions or any items that you would like to take off of consent?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you for looking at me.
Yes, sir.
I would like to take items C and D off and discuss in closed session.
We'll take C and hold and discuss in closed session and D. Any other comments? So right now, a motion would be in order to approve the minutes and the financial reports. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Do I have a support?
Seconded.
Okay, we got Jeff Pearson, and we have Carol from the state. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. With that, Mr. Kavunas, business items would be next, but we think it's well that we go directly into closed session. We're going to take a five-minute break, and then we'll start our deliberation in closed session. And we're still expecting a couple more directors. So.
Very good, Mr. Chairman. We'll leave the room for you.
Thank you. You're all excused. Rick can stay behind. Mr. Cavonis, and we'll call me back to order at
3:42. 2:41. That takes less. I need to look at the big hand and the little hand.
You can turn your speakers back on if you want to be heard. We have no reportable action, Anna. And Peter, we're ready to take action on items C and D of the consent calendar. I think I can take them, the two of them together. Do I have a motion?
I will make a motion to recommend to the advisory committee both items C and D, the application for local storage agreements for the appropriative pool, and the application for local storage agreements for the overlying non-agricultural pool, with a comment that we're approving the form only and would request that the numbers, when they are placed in, that will show up at the time in which our assessment package is created, that we have the opportunity to review those numbers and reflect on the issue of the safe yield and any types of excess carryover that may be subject to Watermaster staff recalculating the safe yield based upon the judge's rulings.
And I hope you got every word of that. Okay, we have a motion. Do I have a support?
Can that be restated again? I'm sorry. I got lost.
The answer is no.
Next time we'll warn you to put your recorder on.
Now, Bob, the motion is to approve both the forms with the ability to go back and review the assessment package to validate that the numbers that are being utilized are correct.
This is item C?
Both C and D.
Okay. Do I have a support?
Support, Nathan DeBoom.
Okay, Peter, do you have any comments? Otherwise, we're going to take action.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Help me for some clarification, perhaps. With your approval, now being considered, these items are moving forward to advisory committee in November. By the time we get to advisory committee in November, all three pools will have considered the assessment package. So I'm not sure what to make of the second half of the motion. But then you will have all the numbers for the storage accounts for all individual parties in both pools that are being considered here. And what I'd like to know is there something specific that you're asking of staff to bring back to your pool for consideration? Or is the consideration of both the assessment package and these applications at advisory sufficient?
Mr. Pearson, you have a response? Otherwise, I'll call on counsel.
Well, at this time, I believe the package that we'll be looking at would be satisfactory. You know, with questions, I presume, from the pool to staff. But I'm not looking at anything special coming back myself. Counsel?
There's always the option to withhold approval until November if that would be more efficient for staff, but I do believe that it's sufficient to just approve it now and then reserve the review of the assessment package in November.
Okay.
Mr. Pearson framed the issue really well to take to the advisory board. So
okay.
I think we're good. Any comments or questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Abstention.
One abstention. Bob Page, County of San Bernardino. Okay, Peter, let's go to business item A, 2A.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon to you and members of the agricultural pool. Business item 2A is consideration of the Chino Basin Storage Framework final report. The report is complete, and Mark Wildermuth will give a presentation on the process and contents of the report.
Mark?
Good afternoon. I'm going to give you a short presentation, sort of summarize the storage framework investigation. So we'll talk about what it is and what our findings are and where it fits in the context of the Water Master major initiatives. So the storage framework is not a storage management plan. It provides a technical structure to build a storage management plan. It's a tool for the evaluation of future storage program applications. And by that, we mean we have the tools, we have the parameters we need to look at to evaluate future storage applications. We made a lot of assumptions about pumping based on information provided by the parties. And you should not think that this pumping is a prescription for that, for it to be maintained. They could have other pumping. This is just our best shot at estimating it. And as you know, we divided up the unused space in the basin into storage bands, operating bands. And when we talk about these operating bands, they're not a reservation of space. They're just increasing blocks of storage from which we do analyses. We also use this term managed storage. Managed storage means water held in storage accounts and carryover. From a context perspective, the storage framework, along with other investigations, is being done and will feed into the OBMP update. We just finished the 2018 Recharge Master Plan update. We have finished the storage framework. We started sometime in the past and still running this salt nutrient management plan update, and we're going to bring back a progress report on that in next month's pool meetings. We've begun the state of the basin work. We've also begun the safe field recalculation. Just about a month ago. All this effort is going to feed into the OBMP update, which is scheduled to begin in January of next year. So we conducted 8 workshops going back starting 2 years ago, where we talked about the need, we talked about the scope, and we talked about what we needed to analyze to evaluate storage programs, storage recovery programs, and then we conducted a series of workshops to talk about that. All this culminated last month in the September 8th workshop, which was a comprehensive presentation of the final report. So we started this work after we defined what these performance metrics or sustainability metrics. We had to define a baseline management plan so that we could figure out how storage and recovery would impact the basin relative to that baseline. So we solicited information from the parties to figure out what they thought they would pump in the future, how much of their water and storage they would use for replenishment. And from that, we were able to develop both a pumping and a recharge plan for the basin. And that best estimate was called Scenario 1A. So we analyzed 1A, and the parties indicated they might like to have multiple baselines, multiple basic trajectories or scenarios of the future, not just this best estimate. So we developed 2 more baselines. Baseline 1, or scenario 1B, the second baseline, was an assumption that the parties would pump their rights all the time, at least their rights. But also, we built in additional conservation beyond which is required by law. And we did a scenario 1C, which is the same as 1A, but also we incorporated more the same amount of conservation as 1B. The effect of the conservation was an actual reduction in safe yield. That means if we use less water outside, we have less deep infiltration of precipitation and applied water. And now it's reflective of what happens with these scenarios. We decided to stick with scenario 1A because scenario 1A utilized the greatest amount of storage space in the basin. This plot shows the historical and projected time history of water in managed storage from near 2000, which is the beginning of the peace agreement implementation, OBMP implementation, to 2050. The historical data, historical curve you see here, represents managed storage from water master assessment packages. And again, it's equal to the water and storage accounts plus carryover. The dark blue line here is the estimate of managed storage from 2017 through 2050. And you can see that it peaks at about 700,000 acre-feet in the year 2030. This is a reflection of pumping, less than pumping rights, the accumulation of water and storage, and then the decline afterwards is when pumping exceeds pumping rights, and some of the water and storage is being used to meet their replenishment obligations. The red line here is the safe storage capacity. It represents the maximum amount of groundwater or managed storage that can occur under the OBMP. And this dashed line here above it at 600,000 represents a temporary increase in that to 600,000. This was part of some work that was done by Water Master and IUA to get an addendum to the 2010 Supplemental Environmental Impact Report. Now this little dashed line here represents an adjustment in managed storage that we made to account for the legacy desalter replenishment obligation. Something like this will happen in the near future when everything is settled out. Thank you. So at this point, this is when we started to divide up the unused storage space into operating bands. And the first operating band was it included all the water that the parties would use, all the managed storage that the parties would use. So the first operating band goes from 0 to 700,000 acre-feet. We then took the next 300,000 acre-feet from 700,000 to 1 acre-feet to 1 million acre-feet and divided that into three equal operating bands of 100,000 acre-feet. The first band, up band 2, goes from 700 to 800,000 acre-feet, and we based its planning on what's happening right now with the dry year yield program. Dry yield programs, 100,000 acre-foot program, and it's using existing facilities. We then created a series of scenarios to represent increasing uses of storage space. And different ways of using it to affect both the puts and the takes. Some using more local facilities and some using new facilities. So we use 10-year cycles. What do I mean by that? When you put water in storage, you put it in when it's surplus, you hold it until you need it, and then you take it out. We use 10-year operating cycles. That's what this chart is showing. 4 years of put, 3 years of hold, and 3 years of take. So in 4 years, we put in the total amount of storage that the band would require to use. We hold it for 3 years, and then we take it out in 3 years. What this chart shows is this baseline if you will, 1A, managed storage. This is the up to 700,000 here represents operating band 1. And this distance between the blue line and the red is this is the storage operating cycle for op band 2. It's the one we're currently using for DYYP. And then we go up 100,000 at a time. So the way this would work is that if you put in 25,000 acre-feet a year for op band 2, we hold it, and then we take out 33,000 acre-feet a year for three straight years. When we go up to 900,000, this has op band 2 in it also. In that particular case, we're putting in 50,000 acre-feet a year, getting 200,000 acre-feet into storage, holding it for 3 years, and taking it out at 67,000 acre-feet a year. And so we get up to the 300,000, we're putting in 75,000 acre-feet a year and then taking out 100,000 acre-feet a year in a take period. So you can see from a facilities and operating point, we're getting much more aggressive as we go from the first operating band above what the parties would do on their own to get up to 300,000 acre-feet a year. Are you okay? So we run these scenarios through the groundwater model, and we get a little different result when we look at managed storage. This is what we plan. This is what it looks like on paper. And we take this information, we create the input files for these scenarios, and we run them. This is what we get back. And let's talk about the purple and the green, which is getting up to 900,000 and a million acre-feet in storage. You'll notice that starting here is when they start. They rise up. They don't quite hit a million. Let's just look at the green one. And it comes down. Instead of coming back and landing on where it would be without the program, it actually goes below. Let's check this out. These, in planning, we should be at the end of each take cycle, we should be right where we would have been had we not done the plan. That makes sense? We're superimposing the storage operation on top of this baseline. But when we run it, you can see that it actually goes below. And as we go through three cycles, this departure from the managed storage under the first op band, it gets greater. And what's happening is as we store water and hold it, we're beginning to reduce the infiltration in the Santa Ana River. It's just a hydraulic effect. It's the way the basin works. When that happens, if you do not account for it, then the storage in the basin is going to go down. This is basically lost water. You'll notice that when we looked at the second operating band, that did not happen. Well, what we did was we were producing these final set of simulations. We noticed that every time we ran this first up band 2 with 100,000 acre foot program, that's all it was, we noticed that every time, at the end of every cycle, we had 15,000 acre feet water less in storage. So we wanted to run a numerical experiment to figure out how you might mitigate that. So what you're seeing is here is a mitigation for this loss of recharge. And what we did was, because we saw 15,000 acre-feet loss every cycle, we just merely took that last take from the three-year take and we reduced it. So in this particular one, we plan to take out 33,000 acre-feet a year for three straight years. Instead of doing that, we took out 33,000 acre-feet for the first 2 years, and then we took out 18. And you can see that it pretty precisely lands right back where it should. So one of the results of this work is that we know one way, at least, to mitigate this loss of recharges is we just reduce the last take. This table summarizes...
You know, I don't know if everybody picked that up, but that's a very expensive thing that Mark just described, because we're talking about extra water storing it in the Chino Basin. So let's just take, for easy figure, $500 an acre foot. where it's 100,000 acre foot. We're going to put 25,000 in a year to put 100,000 in, and then we're going to hold it for 3 years, and then we're going to take 33 out. But Mark said that we can't take all 33 out or we'll lose that water, so we got to reduce the last take by 15,000 acre foot.
To compensate for the lost return.
Compensate. Well, you paid to put it in. You don't take it out, it gets charged. Somebody, you had to pay. So 15,000 times 500 bucks is $7.5 million worth of water that gets lost. That you have to essentially leave behind.
You know, this is one way to mitigate it. Another way is to let it happen and just work out some financial exchange with Orange County or something. It's all. There's other ways to mitigate too, where we get the water. This was just merely an attempt to see if we could do it that way. It's not a recommendation, and it may not be reality, Jeff, because we could, for example, beef up production into the Salters to make up for it. This chart shows sort of summarizes some of the key performance indicators, if you will, for these storage and recovery programs as we expand the use of storage above 700,000 acre feet. We looked at the pumping sustainability, new land subsidence, and basically a factor which we created to express what that net recharge loss is when we store water, and hydraulic control. For pumping sustainability, we really didn't see any challenges. So smaller storage program and the way we did it didn't seem to be much of a problem. But when we got into these higher storage ranges, we started to begin to see some wells were starting to have sustainability problems that didn't have them before. With new land subsidence, there really is not any new land subsidence initiated by these. There's some areas which, not by storage and recovery, let's just leave it at that. For reductions in annual net recharge as a percentage of the annual storage space used, you'll see that in this scenario 2C, where we had that 15,000 acre foot, we have about 2.4% per year of the water stored, the average water stored. You see that drops in these initiatives that use or ones that use more water, more storage. This particular scenario, 2C, we're using the contracted take obligation in the dry year yield program. And it doesn't exactly sync with how the water gets in the ground. So it's not very efficient in that regard. When we did these programs, these are engineered. And you may remember, you can certainly look this up in the report, we looked at how you would try to implement large-scale programs. And we stayed out of the subsidence areas. We stayed away from plumes as much as we could. And it kind of puts you in a certain quadrant of the basin. We also want to be near metropolitan pipelines because we have to export some of this water. And frankly, we have to import it too, so to bring it into the basin. So we cited recharge and production facilities and used existing facilities in sort of the northeast quadrant of the basin. And we did this in a way where we were more efficient at recovery of the water. And the pressure effect of the projects didn't get as far down the basin. So they're a little bit more hydraulically efficient. Under hydraulic control, it was maintained throughout all these scenarios. Although when we got to the 200,000 and 300,000, we saw that our margin of safety there was declining and getting close to a violation. The last thing we looked at was the effect of storing water on plumes. Now, we don't show it on this map, but we're storing water up in this part of the world up here. The plumes we're showing up here is this Pomona TCE anomaly. There's really not a plume. We don't know much about it. We just know there are a lot of TCE in the area. This is the GE Flatiron plume, the GE test cell plume. The South Archibald plume. This is the prison, PCE plume at the prison. This is the plume at the Chino Airport. And there's a little plume here at the Milliken landfill. These brown and green polygons you see here represent something current status or state of the plumes, where we think they might be based on data. Now, the dashed lines represent, we think, the proximate plume location in 2056. And this Pomona plume, in 30 years, it seems to be either self-attenuated or it's pumped out. Same thing here at the prison. The Milliken plume, it doesn't seem to ever go anywhere. It's just, it's always, if it's a low-level plume, it isn't. We got monitoring all over it. It just stays in one spot. So we're, basically, it's attenuating in place. South Archibald plume collapses into the Salter well field. It's gone. So we're left with the Flatiron plume and the Tessel plume. The black line represents where it would go without a storage recovery program. This is our baseline. And the colored dashed lines show where it might go under these storage and recovery programs. And so really it's the programs that scenarios, all three storage tranches or operating bands are at IOU a quarter. They are affected. They affect the plumes, these two plumes. This would be, you know, sort of a, might consider this MPI. They're interfering with the remediation efforts of these plumes. I'm not making a finding like that. I'm just telling you it might be said to be MPI. So the Chino Airport plume we're showing here, this is kind of what it would look like without mitigation. We know there's a mitigation plan that's going to go into place. We've not modeled it. What you can see is that the storage programs don't really affect it. So we have produced a report. The draft report went out in two port parts in the summertime. We have comments on those reports. And we completed the report. It's seven sections and four appendices. It's about 300 pages long with all the documentation. We received comments from City of Ontario, Monte Vista, San Antonio Water Company, and from you guys. All the comments and the responses to comments are included in Appendix C. So if you want to see that, your comments, you can go look at how we responded in Appendix C. So I guess I'll take any questions if you have them.
Any questions of Mark? Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Peter, any more comments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, a couple comments. The first one is that in this process, probably the most difficult thing was getting people to call this a storage framework study instead of storage management plan. And we were successful with that. And thanks to Mark and his team who did a great job. We're now moving on to updating the storage management plan that was part of the OBMP from 2000. We're actually, as you know, updating the entire OBMP from the year 2000, and the storage management plan will be updated as part of that. And I did want to share with you that we've begun that process internally, and we'll be reaching out to the pools in the next couple of months to get input.
Gentlemen, they're asking for a recommendation to the advisory board. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Do I hear a support?
Support.
Jeff Van Inheuvel, Bob Page. Any questions, comments, concerns? Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good piece of work and a great foundation for what comes next.
Well said. Calling for the question. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried, Peter.
Thank you, sir.
Safe field reset.
Mr. Chairman, we have nothing to report on this item.
An any questions or comments relating to safe field reset? Old business.
Mr. Chairman, on this item, at the last month's meeting, the pool requested information about the ag pools fund balance, and Joe has some information for you.
I'm hoping it's somewhere around $600,000. Go ahead, Joe.
No, it's a little bit less than that. Basically, if everyone was to turn to page 39 in their packet, they would see the B3 report. This report is in the packet every month. And let me just walk you through what this report does. This report does a couple of different things. It takes the revenues and the expenses, and it drops it into, as we talked before, cash buckets, so that at any point in time, we as Watermaster can look to see who has the money and where the money is at. So let me just take a couple minutes to just describe and give a little bit of detail on what these titles are. You'll notice at the top there, you'll see Watermaster Administration, or sorry, the columns or rows, OBMP, and then we have their pool administration special projects. We have appropriative pool, ag pool, and the non-ag pool. Then we have a column for groundwater replenishment. We have a column for LAIF value adjustment. We have a column here for GASB 75 adjustments, and then the grand total. So if we were to look, on the far right-hand side here is our amended budget. So if we look at our expenses and revenue, so we had revenue, this is for the period July 1st, 2018 through August 31st, 2018. We had revenues of $167,000, and that was all within the Watermaster administration. We then had expenses, and if you look here, we had $408,000 worth of expenses for administration. We then also had OBMP expenses. We also had pool expenses for the appropriative pool, pool expenses for the ag pool, and pool expenses for the non-ag pool. Those expenses are then totaled. And so if we look at revenue minus expenses, that's where you see that $240,000. This $240,000 is then allocated based on production. So you can see the appropriative pool was allocated $174,000 of expenses, the ag pool $57,000, and a non-ag pool $9,000. Then we have an allocation for the OBMP expenses. And you can notice that we've taken the debt service out of the OBMP, because the debt service is only covered by the appropriative pool. So then we take, again, similar to what we've done with the other admin expenses, we take the OBMP and we allocate those to the appropriative pool, the ag pool, and then a non-ag pool, again, based on production. Now, the process of all means all means that the ag pool expenses are no longer paid by the ag pool, they are transferred over and paid for by the appropriative pool. So if you then look at the totals down here, you'll see that the there are expenses allocated to the appropriative pool. There is zero expenses allocated to the agricultural pool, and we have expenses allocated to the non-agricultural pool. And then these totals here, this is where this is basically your equity line. So if you were to look at the balance sheet, you would see the Watermaster equity of $5.3 million. We then allocate, based on these expenses and based on your previous equity, so you can see now that the bucket, as we call it, of cash, there's $5.4 million for appropriative pool. The agricultural pool, $493,000, and then the non-agricultural pool, which is in a deficit position, and then all of these others. So to answer your question, Mr. Feenstra, you have $493,000 and change in your fund.
You were only $100,000 off. Very good. Keep going.
No.
Now, well
A question that someone may ask is, how does this ever increase? Well, it increases because every quarter we receive interest from LAIF for all of the money that we have invested. And based on your percentage of money, based on the grand total, so let's just throw out, if you had 20% of the funds invested, then you would get 20% of the interest. So every quarter, I book an amount of interest. Now, last year, it was about $8,000, around $2,000 per quarter. So you would expect to see, for this fiscal year, probably another $8,000 to $10,000 worth of interest added. So at the end of this year, you would have a little bit over $500 million.
I like $500 million better.
Half a million.
He's trying so hard to help me.
Joe, I was going to say that's good math.
Joe, thank you so much for this report. The purpose of it is we have Mr. Peter Smub, one of our newest members of the pool, and this was established early on, Ron, through Piece One, and it was done through a negotiation when we decided on the deal, and Mr. Koopman and I wanted to hold this as a reserve in order to establish a line of defense if ever needed. And so that's why that money is there, and we hope Joe makes it grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes. Any questions?
Well, while we don't consider any of our cash restricted, when we do talk about the ag pool fund money or the non-ag money, I consider that as restricted, that's money only for use by the ag pool and or used by the non-ag or used by the appropriate pool.
Thank you so much. Jeff.
Yeah, my understanding of how that money came to be is different than what you described.
Okay, let's see what you remember.
Okay, when the judgment was entered into in 1977, the ag pool had 82,800 acre feet of annual safe yield. We weren't sure if we were going to pump more than that, and so the ag pool at that time bought some water.
Correct.
Pre-purchased replenishment water. And after the judgment began to operate, it became clear that we would not need that replenishment water because we were pumping below our safe yield. And so there came a point in time when we sold that water, probably to Watermaster, for replenishment. But we sold it, and it was the profit from selling that water that formed the original funding for this ag pool kitty.
Thank you, Jeff. I really thought nobody would care, but I'm glad you explained it very clearly. That's exactly what happened.
We should have hung on to it.
Yes, we should.
We probably would have made more money hanging out of that water and selling at today's rate.
That's correct.
That's what Paul says.
But we weren't in a position to do that. Any other questions, corrections, or comments? Hearing none, thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just a note from Mr. Petersma, who asked for the information. Is that Joe took the time to give you a deep dive into Report B3, which is available to you on a monthly basis, so you can keep an eye on it at any time that you'd like.
I want to warn you all that there's no restrictions on that fund except for the chairman. That may have to spend some of that money from time to time. Nobody smiled. That was no fun. Let's go to the next item. Reports and updates, legal.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the pool committee. Two quick updates.
First, in regard
to the appeal of the April 28, 2017 order, nothing new on that from the Court of Appeal or in regard to the Court of Appeal process. You'll recall that in July, the six parties to the appeal filed a couple requests with the Court of Appeal to both keep the stay in place on the matter and for a limited remand to Judge Reichert. The Court of Appeal has not taken any action or issued any correspondence in response to those filings.
Any comments or questions? Hearing none.
In regard to the December 28, 2018 hearing, there are now four motions that are on calendar for that day. The first is the motion to confirm stay pending appeal that was filed by the three parties that appealed the court's April 2017 order. That was filed by them back in August of last year. The second is the non-ag pools motion regarding amendment of its pooling plan that was filed on October 4th. And then this past Tuesday, there were two Water Master motions filed. The first was a motion for the court to receive and file the two most recent semi-annual OBMP status reports. And the second was a joint motion with IUA for the court approval of the 2018 RMPU, which went through the pool committee's advisory committee and board last month.
Thank you for that information, Mr. Harima. Who is going to show up on the 28th? You're going to probably be skiing in the Alps right after Christmas.
No, I'll be there.
Very good. Any questions of Mr. Harima? Hearing none. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Engineer.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Malone.
I have four items. The first is the ground level monitoring committee activities. We have a draft annual report that's out for review and comment right now. There's one more week left to submit comments. Comments are due by next Thursday. And then we will be responding to comments and bringing a final report through the committee process next month. One other thing to report on, I've been reporting to you that the Pomona extensometer, we're getting ready to commence drilling activities. That won't occur until right after Thanksgiving. That's when we'll start. The second item is the plume status reports. These are in the back of your agenda packet. We monitor and track the point source contaminant plumes across the Chino Basin as part of Program Element 1 of the OBMP, which is the monitoring program, and Program Element 6, which is collaborative efforts with the state water quality regulators. And so we've been doing this over the years and collecting all this data, and we've determined at this point in time that there is enough changes that occur frequently enough in regulatory orders, remedial actions, monitoring and reporting, and other activities to justify having annual reports. We've been reporting semi-annually on two plumes, the Chino Airport and the South Archibald plume. But at this point, we're going to include all the other plumes on an annual basis to provide these update status reports. So they are in your packet for your review. Each report looks similar. It talks about the contaminants of concern within each plume, the location of the plume. We oftentimes include a map that shows the contaminant concentrations as we understand them today. We describe the regulatory history and the regulatory cleanup orders, if any. Any remedial actions that are occurring, and any other recent activities associated with the plumes. So, again, in the back of your package for your review.
Okay.
In 2020, we are going to go through another safe yield recalculation, but it's a two-year process that includes the use of the groundwater flow model. And so this fiscal year, we have planned and budgeted an update to the model and a recalibration to the model. And then next fiscal year, we'll be running the planning simulations to recalculate the safe yield for 2020. We've begun that process this fiscal year to update and recalibrate the model. Some of those activities that we've been going through right now is we're updating the model so it can simulate land subsidence. So we've begun that process, and we've also collected some recent LIDAR data along the Santa Ana River to give us better estimates of what that channel geometry is down there that's going to assist us in simulating groundwater surface water interactions in the Santa Ana River, which we all know is very important to the Chino Basin. So we've begun that process. I just wanted to give you that update. We will be talking about this this update over the next 2 years and bringing that to your attention. The last item is a data request that Water Master received to support the integrated model. And Mark's going to talk about that data request. And then Edgar later on is going to be talking about the integrated model and giving you some more background information on that.
Good afternoon again. Water Master received a request for information a couple of weeks ago for hydrologic and other information that we use in our modeling work. Specifically, Water Master was asked for our pumping projections by well, supplemental water recharge, you know, by facility and by water type, and stormwater recharge. And so we're in the process of putting together that information request for that modeling work.
Who requested that?
It was requested by an engineering firm called Geoscience. Geoscience is the contractor for the integrated model.
She's the sponsor of the integrated model.
I'm going to let Edgar talk to you about that. It's complicated.
Yeah.
Actually, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, members of the pool, we had planned on providing you a report on that whole thing, the integrated model, as well as the HCP under GM report item 3. So it might make more sense if we have that report presented to you at this time.
Perfect.
Edgar, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the pool. Just to bring a little bit of background of the integrated model and also the habitat conservation plan and how these two efforts relate. The integrated model is a model effort led by San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District at the suggestion from the wildlife agencies to build a upper watershed model that analyze the surface and groundwater interactions and the effects of the different management strategies in the Santa Ana River upper watershed. This model is being funded by San Bernardino Valley, Inland Empire Utilities Agency, Western Municipal Water District, Orange County Water District, and the City of Riverside. The results from this model will inform some of the activities for the Habitat Conservation Plan, which is more broad in scope. Now, this is what the request for information came last or 2 weeks ago, and we had a meeting with Valley District, IUA, Geoscience, and Mark to discuss this request for information. On the Habitat Conservation Plan, just a little bit of background. Water Master partnered with IUA back in 2014 to participate in the Upper Watershed Habitat Conservation Plan, which is an effort to expedite the obtaining permits, incidental take permits, in the case for IUA and Water Master, for the improvements of the Recharge Master Plan update, the 2013 Recharge Master Plan update, and operation and maintenance of the recharge basins. The development of this plan started back in 2014, and it seems to be gaining more momentum. And right now there's discussions about the governance structure, how this plan is going to operate, and the financial funding for this habitat conservation plan, and so on. Right now, the proposal for the governance of this habitat conservation plan is the creation of a joint powers authority that will have an administrative structure of an executive director, a manager for the permits, and the conservation bank, some staff biologists and scientists, and there's also talks about subcontracting some rangers with the county sheriff for patrolling the areas of the Santa Ana River that will be enhanced and preserved as part of the mitigation for some of the projects in the upper watershed. Right now, Water Master and IUA are monitoring and following the development of the Habitat Conservation Plan very closely. And we plan to bring updates on a regular basis. Also, we bring updates to the Recharge Investigation and Projects Committee every month. So if you're interested in hearing a monthly update, we can either bring it to the pool or you can read the updates that we give at the RIPCOM meetings. With that, I will entertain questions.
I have a question. Can I ask a question? Is the request for the data and the model and you're sort of linking it with the HCP, is it related to the agencies that made the request requirements for mitigation, for lack of a better term, for their recharge projects and the concern that their multiple recharge projects would have on habitat? Is that what this is linked to?
There hasn't been any request for mitigation. This
No. There, I'm sorry. So the data that they've requested so they can build their model that they're requesting from this basin, because they are active in the upper Santa Ana, right? And they have recharge projects that they're required to mitigate for. And in particular, they had to buy 295 acres or something. There's five projects. Is this all connected? And how does their work and their information from this basin help them? Is it an attempt to prove that they don't need to mitigate as much? Or what is the thinking? Or do you not know?
Linkage.
Right now, the objective is to analyze the accumulated impacts of the projects in the upper watershed, which are mainly recycled water projects, not as much as recharge, but mostly recycled water projects that Valley District, Western, and the City of Riverside and other agencies in the upper watershed have put into the HCP covered activities. And the request for information that we got is only for the stormwater capture and the pumping, the monthly pumping, and what else, Mark?
They wanted us to provide our pumping projections by well, on a little different time step than we would do it. At least we have been doing it. And then they wanted monthly recharge of supplemental waters, recycled and imported water, in our projections, and stormwater.
And just to give a little more context, the development of this integrated model, one of the concerns that we had going into it, but following it, was the development of a baseline. Because we have been discussing with them that the baseline should already include the existing conditions and the current management strategies in place for the Chino Basin. So we are ensuring that there's no double dip into looking at different management strategies that are already in place in the Chino Basin.
Okay. Can I have a follow-up? Can I ask a follow-up?
Yes.
When you say it's recycled water projects, not recharge, what are you talking about? What is your distinction? Is it the use of recycled water on as an application? What?
The majority.
All those reclamation projects.
Right. Oh.
And recharge and stormwater recharge projects. In the upper watershed, the effect is going to be a decline on discharge from the overlying land to the stream system.
Right. Okay, I got it. All right, got it. Okay.
Any more questions? Wow. Jeff.
Yeah. Based on what you know now, if all the projects they have in mind get built, by order of magnitude, what is its impact on the flow in the river?
Well, ICF, which is their consultant for the modeling of the impacts of the cumulative impacts for the project, estimated a 36 CFS minimum of flow in the river to obtain a non-jeopardy opinion for the Santa Ana sucker and some other species that are covered in the Santa Ana River. But the cumulative effort modeling hasn't been concluded, so I don't know what's the impact that these projects will have.
Can I ask what's the average flow now of the Santa Ana River?
It
varies all up and down.
Is it 100? Is it 500? Is it 1,000?
It's about 100 CFS or more at Prado.
Okay. I mean, the reason why we should be paying attention to this is because, remember, what we do in the desalter program and hydraulic control does double duty. We bring down the level of the Chino Basin so that we don't leak any water into the Santa Ana River. That's the control part. But we also get the added benefit that when we draw down the groundwater levels in the Chino Basin, we create the circumstance where gravity pulls water off the river into the Chino Basin. So part of the reason why we don't have to fully replenish for the desalter is because that hydraulic control induces water from the river into the Chino Basin. To the extent that the upper basin interest, remember, the Santa Ana River would essentially be dry most of the year were it not for these the usage of the Santa Ana River as a discharge for the water treatment facilities upriver from us. To the extent that these upriver entities begin to utilize their discharge water, there'll be less water in the river. To the extent that there's less water in the river, there's less water available to induce into the Chino Basin. So it's all kind of connected. Our tie to it, and this was always a point of concern, is that when we did the hydraulic control plant, at least theoretically, to the Fish and Wildlife Agency, who was responsible for habitat down there and the various endangered critters, be it the Santa Ana sucker, the least Bell's vireo, to the extent that we were inefficient about controlling the waters in the Chino Basin and they spilled, they potentially created wetted areas down in that Prado Basin. And so the question is, if we do a better job and create hydraulic control and prevent that leakage, does that damage the habitat? We said, we don't think so. And they said, okay, but we want you to prove it. So that's the foundation for us doing the investigation on the habitat conservation plan. And we built monitoring wells, and we took lots of pictures about the way it was and tried to measure what was green and what was brown and all that. We're just kind of getting sucked deeper. We're getting sucked deeper in with this. I don't know that there's any way not to play. I mean, we're kind of in. We got to play. So I guess my question would be to staff, do you see any reason, any justifiable reason we can deny this request to Geoscience, or we got to give them this information and just keep playing ball?
Well, from way we see it, what we see at Jeff is that if they're asking for data that we have, it seems that it's a collaborative thing to do, if nothing else, to share data that we have. If there's data that we have that needs to be manipulated in order to produce information that they want, it seems like the right thing to do would be to ask them to pay for that. And we don't really have a concern with giving them the data as much as we do have a concern with the model being as good as our model would be in Chino Basin. We're a little concerned that we offered them use of our model, and they said, no, thank you, we'd rather have one big model for the entire basin. And we have the most significant concern that we have is not really focused on the data or the model, it's how the model with our data in it would be used. Specifically, what is the baseline? And one of our finely pointed notions is that hydraulic control needs to be included into what's considered baseline conditions. And anything else, anything less than that, is a real cause for concern and possible action.
Yeah. And who's making this request?
Well, so go back a little bit. you have agencies that want to do projects upstream, including IUA within Chino Basin, Recharge Master Plan Update projects. Projects have the potential of impacting endangered species. The way to get permitting is you can apply, each project can apply on their own, or a habitat conservation plan can be created that gives you sort of a preemptive, the preemptive ability to have some impacts on endangered species. I'm giving you kind of a generalized version of this. I'm sure the attorneys in the room could parse this down in a million ways. But the idea is that you have water agencies in the entire watershed that are interested in having their projects get this sort of pre-approved take of endangered species so that they can qualify with the Endangered Species Act as far as their projects are concerned. And to do that, you need a habitat conservation plan which says, here's the projects, here's the impacts we think they're going to have, here's the mitigation that we need to put in place. And as Edgar described, there's a joint powers authority that would be implementing this along with its own staff, with its own governance. And so we're looking at this saying, okay, well, this might be the right way to go, watershed-wide, but it certainly shouldn't be at the expense of Chino Basin that has been 20 years ahead of everybody else in terms of establishing its projects and doing very expensive monitoring in Prado and caring for our impacts.
So could our hydraulic control be compromised by giving them this information and
no,
with them attempting to do additional projects, reducing the flow in the river?
I don't think so. I don't think us giving them information is what's going to jeopardize hydraulic control. What jeopardizes, well, what could raise questions is the way they use the model. And so we're participating along with IUA and insisting on a certain baseline that includes hydraulic control.
And that's at the ultimate pumping of
the desalter fields. Yes. Yeah.
Pete Hall, did you have a question? Bob, I saw a finger there somewhere. So.
Peter, is it safe to assume that they have not wholeheartedly been supportive of including our work in the baseline?
I think my
gut is that they wouldn't want to include our work in the baseline, and they might think that it was presumptuous of us to think that we could take water from the river.
I think that's a fair assessment. They've been reluctant. We've had to tell them on several occasions. I think we still need to tell them a few more times.
Okay. How's Doug?
Doug is representing an agency that got the bad end of the deal on the Santa Ana suction decision. So they've become convinced that the HCP is the way to go, and he's moving forward with that direction from his board. Let's put an HCP in place that gives us the ability to move forward. We do need to do this. I'm not sure where Doug is on the baseline question. Some of the folks working for him, we have some doubts as to where they are.
Can I make one more comment? I assume you're following the flow study that the State Board initiated in the LA region that's related to this issue, where LA County Sanitation has notified everyone there's no more recycled water available because of flow concerns, and so the State Board is initiating a study on just one waterway. If you aren't following it, I would encourage you to follow it. And there are two board members at the State Board that, if you want to communicate, would be receptive, and it's Tam and Steve. So just wanted to offer that for your thought process on this, because my understanding is that the flow study would be extrapolated across all of the Southern California regions on this issue. Thanks.
It's not just LA River, the Ventura River, the State Board right now is putting together its own integrated model of the river and the groundwater.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great.
Bob Page.
Yeah, just the other little bit of information that I'm aware of regarding this HCP is that the parties in the HCP had one of the, I think Rialto was one of the parties, right? And at some point a couple years ago, or in the last couple years, Rialto went rogue and went to the regional board and tried to zero out their effluent from their treatment plant, and the other parties basically had to go to the regional board publicly and oppose it to keep that from happening because their HCP is moving in the direction of relying upon Rialto's effluent to provide habitat for the fish.
Any other questions of Edgar?
But one last thought from my perspective is we're collaborating with IUA on this. And IUA and staff and board's positions on this are really critical because we're not an agency that's involved in the HCP. We're not an agency at all. We're a water master. But we do have technical expertise in Wildermuth and their model. We have some really good people in the legal field, some good people in the overall economics and environment field. We're a resource to IUA, but IUA is the agency that's representing the interest in this region.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Edgar.
Peter?
So, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we can go back in sequence and take the CFR report. Joe has an update on our assessment package schedule.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members of the Agricultural Pool. This is my report is on the fiscal year 2018-19 assessment package. We are expecting to do the workshop number one on Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018, at the Watermaster office, 1 o'clock. If needed, Watermaster will be doing workshop number two on Tuesday, October 30th, 2018, again at Watermaster offices at 1 o'clock. Once the assessment package has been completed, it will be presented to the pools on Thursday, November 8th, 2018, and then also both to the advisory committee for approval and presentation to the board for adoption, both on Thursday, November 15th, 2018. And we will be issuing the assessment invoices no later than Friday, November 16th. Those invoices will be emailed as we have in the past. And the judgment states that payments must be made within 30 days. 30 days from November 16th would be December 16th. That is a Sunday. So payments would be due to Watermaster no later than 5 o'clock on Monday, December 17th, 2018. And as past practice, Watermaster will accept payments either by check, ACH, or direct wire transfer.
Any questions of the assessment package schedule? Joe, thank you.
Thank you.
GM report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the beginning of the meeting, we covered item one, was the introduction of the new employees. The second item is really an item that pertains to the appropriative pool and the non-agricultural pool. It was there for us to let them know that at this point in time, they don't seem to have a rate established for conducting an Exhibit G Paragraph 9 exchange, and they both said they would tend to that. Item 3 was the update from Edgar on the Habitat Conservation Plan. And under other, I've already mentioned to you that we've begun the OBMP update process with in-house discussion and wanted to also make sure that you've received an invitation to the 40th anniversary event, the commemoration of the 40th judgment anniversary event. We understand that Evite software has a glitch where you might get somebody else's meal preference. Did everybody get that?
Yeah.
So two things about that. One is you can disable that. Apparently, if you go into that email, you can disable receiving those. And also, I would advise you to remember the other person's preference because we're going to have you stand up and tell us what the other person is having for dinner. I do love tests.
Good information.
I do love
tests.
It's
really fun to see what everybody orders.
It is kind of fun. It's an unintended consequence. You know, those things in life are always most interesting. And that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Yes, Mr. Page.
Yeah, Peter, I know that the Watermaster collected supportive comments on the basin reprioritization process that DDBR has been going through as part of SGMA. Any indication at this point as you guys are tracking that, whether there were any comments on the other side of the issue that were objecting that might sway DWR not to reprioritize basins the way they are proposing in terms of fringe areas?
So Brad can give you a brief description of the comment that was submitted. There was sort of a comment that was universally applied, generalizing again, but universally applied to most basins. And then Edgar was reaching out to them to find out the status of Brad.
There was an entity called Clean Water Action. I'm not familiar with them before this, but they are their coordinator for this issue submitted a number of comment letters on a number of different basins. Her comment letter in regard to Chino Basin said the basin itself, if you designate it very low priority, that doesn't accurately capture the fact that the basin is an important water resource for the area. But it also said that the fringe areas shouldn't have to do GSPs. So I haven't spoken directly with anyone from DWR about that, but to me, that is not inconsistent with the position that we took on the treatment of fringe areas. So Edgar may have more info.
Thank you, Brad. I reached out to the Department of Water Resources to ask for an update on their timeline for finalizing the reprioritization, and their answer was that they are working right now on responding to all comments, and they expect to issue a final reprioritization in November this year.
Thank you, Edgar. Does that conclude your report?
Yes, sir.
Boy, you were easy today. Pool chairman's update. Let's see. Do we have announced our Christmas party yet? Or December 20th. Oh, that's too late.
After the court hearing on the 28th.
I've had the opportunity this month and even the last part of September to get a lot of phone calls on the efforts on storage and reset and safe yield and all that. That's interesting times, Peter. You've got a lot on your plate. Any way that you need to communicate with us, please feel free to call myself or Tracy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pool member comments around the table. Hearing, seeing none. Any more items to come before the Ag Pool meeting? Seeing none, we'll stand adjourned.